The Truth News Network.
When you can't tell the players without a scorecard, when men identify as women, white women identify as Native American, rich, privileged Hollywood types protest wealth and privilege by going to jail for abusing wealth and privilege, and no one has the brass to speak the truth, there's always TNN,
the Truth News Network.
And here to throw the lightning is Dan Newman.
Well, believe me, we have the brass to tell the story, and that's what we're all about today. We're talking about demagoguery. It's going to be a little bit different today. Demagoguery, it's a horrible word that defines a horrible situation. Demagoguery. It is today alive in America, and it ain't because of Donald Trump, regardless of what others think. Let's just consider Webster's definition of the word, and you decide how applicable it is for insertion into the current U.S. political system. Demagoguery is a manipulative approach often associated with dictators and sleazy politicians that appeals to the worst nature of people. Demagoguery isn't based on reason, issues, and doing the right thing. It's based on stirring up fear and hatred to control people. In 2019, demagoguery is rampant throughout the political landscape. Honestly, it's been alive in D.C. for decades or even longer, but politicians have been effective at keeping its identity hidden with political platitudes and verbiage that Americans have just become accustomed to. We're pretty much lulled to sleep, but that certainly changed with Donald Trump. It is certainly true that the president is verbose, often crude, self-confident that borders on narcissism, but no one who knows Donald Trump on a personal level or really looks at his history before politics can truthfully claim he is a demagogue, though Democrats try. How does somebody make a demagogue? How does somebody become one? Demagogues in politics are abundant today. We'll talk in a few minutes about the ones making headlines right now. But if a person wants a career in politics, creating just the right public perception is mandatory. That perception is often created by leaders of whichever party he or she embraces. And that perception and persona is created, and it's perpetuated for a specific political identity, one that will smooth the path for campaign contribution and harvest votes for those candidates and other members of their party. Just like always, folks, in Washington, D.C., if you have questions about anything, follow the money. The authenticity of identity gets tossed into the Potomac to be replaced by the identity of the day or month or year that the party agenda a la carte dictates. And if any politician wishes to win the White House, well, the best way is to make the most noise, be the loudest, convince Americans they need that politician in charge. In most cases, however, the demagoguery comes later. After a political leader has amassed enormous power, has passed out political favors and the perks that go with it, and learns that he or she who knows where all the skeletons are buried has virtually uncontrollable power, and they act that way, they become demagogues. Some would say that Donald Trump is a demagogue, and they would be wrong. By its definition, Trump is anything but that. Listen, he is too pro-American. He's too into the American people and too uninterested in assuming any control over people. He shows that over and over again. In the Mueller probe, he ordered everyone in his administration to testify when asked, turn over every document when subpoenaed, and to fully cooperate with the special counsel. Now, demagogues don't do that. Certainly, his predecessor would have interrupted, if not interfered with that process, as he did in other investigations to thwart those conducting them, not Donald Trump. But there are demagogues in D.C. today. A few names that come to mind, Nancy Pelosi, and also Chuck Schumer. Pelosi made a mad tour to illustrate why she is showing she's a demagogue. She made a mad tour to Europe to meet with European leaders not very long ago, in fact, right after the midterm elections. In those meetings, she told those with whom she met that she, as Speaker of the House, had equal power with the President. Now, she didn't think all of this was going to get back to the American press, but it did. But you didn't see or hear about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post or on MSNBC or CBS or ABC, and that list goes on and on. In fact, while there, she told them that the House, now under Democrat control, her control, means she and the House are more powerful than this president because they control all the money. Chuck Schumer runs a minority in the Senate with a whip and his demeaning conversations. It's obvious he hates everyone in D.C. that doesn't answer to him and is a government control freak. And he deplores President Trump. And then there's the media. Let's face it. Today's mainstream media no longer present actual news. Political policy partisanship is what we see in here in every one of their stories. Truth, it's immaterial. Facts no longer matter. And who's in charge of what to report and what to keep hidden is no longer even kept a secret. They don't care what people think. And there are demagogues in the media. I'm going to shock you a bit, but I'll give you a name of one. Bill O'Reilly. Now, he was shot down at Fox News in spite of his massive audience and revenue generation for Fox. His Achilles heel, apparently, were the ladies. And Bill apparently felt he was too important, too famous, and too good at netting his boss big advertising dollars to be replaced. Fox proved him wrong. Bill O'Reilly had found he had become a demagogue. And he kind of liked it. I mean, he was a demagogue when it came to talk news. Then across the aisle in media, there are lots of examples of demagoguery. Rachel Maddow has become the goddess of MSNBC. Commentators on The View act on air like none of their guests have a clue about anything. And those hosts work diligently on every show to prove that fact to those who dare show up. The two divas there are Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar, who had no one, absolutely no one, messes with them. No one on television is more controlling and manipulative than those two. But you know what? As long as political demagoguery has been going on in Washington, D.C., it's under attack. The benign permission for it that has existed in Washington, that no one there even tries to hide anymore, is under an actual onslaught today. And that onslaught is led, actually, by Mr. Trump. His primary tool is this: confrontation using the truth. And as doing so has rocked Washington, and they simply don't know how to respond. Trump attacks all the ridiculousness in governing head on. He does it every day in Twitter, in interviews. He's a soundbite guy that everybody loves to have on the air. He understands the elitism that actually fuels demagoguery there, and he laughs at it. And the demagogues that he faces, he laughs at them too. He lives as Achilles lived. Do you remember Achilles? Well, at least the way Brad Pitt lived in that role in the movie Troy, one of my favorites. He took his enemies down one at a time, just like Trump. Never bowing, never giving up. Achilles in the movie fought face to face with his foes, never shying or looking away from them, always keeping his eye on his enemy. So does Trump. There's a new group of demagogues in D.C. that Trump is taking on right now, today. He's appointed an attorney general who is a no-nonsense lawman who ignores the verbal abuse from the demagogues in D.C. media and from their minions, and is steadily just pushing forward with his job of being the chief law enforcer in the nation. The demagogues have started whining, shouting, and frankly are crying because their demagoguery suddenly has been exposed, and they don't know how to handle it. The Mueller probe was a ruse. A witch hunt, as the president calls it. Now, don't start throwing things at your TV or your computer screen or whatever for me saying that. It was a ruse. It was a joke. It was a setup. It was not a legitimate investigation. It should have never happened. It was politically motivated, initiated by a political power push from demagogues in Washington, and its roots have been exposed and are being pulled up one at a time. When Attorney General Barr announced the appointment of John Durham, it was the first spear in the sides of the demagogues, and they're howling about it. Why? Because they're scared to death. Why are they scared to death? From our research, we have a list of those, much of which are political demagogues who were key bad players in the coup attempt to overthrow a duly elected president, Donald Trump. The net of exposure of embalming has been cast wide by Barr, and it's covering a bunch of them. Before we give you the names of those on the list, here's how this investigation's going to go. And this is what we've discovered. And it's going to work. I promise you it's going to work. It's actually the same process that Robert Mueller and his team of attorneys attempted. And it didn't work for them. But the reason it didn't work for them was there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Their premise for even beginning it was gone and worthless from the very beginning. Here's what Barr and Durham are going to do. Actually, they've already begun this process. They start very, very low, with those lower in the political pecking order. Durham will determine who of those were directly involved, exactly how, what they actually did, and who they answered to. Then they'll try to parlay that information to obtain other information from those people regarding the involvement of those at a level higher than they are in government. The Barr-Durham task process is really no different than a local DA busting a drug user, then squeezing the drug user to get his supplier, squeezing the supplier to get his distributor, and then squeezing the distributor to get the international drug trafficker. You start at the bottom and you work up. So let's take a look at those involved, starting from those low who will likely give up those above them. Let's go to the DOJ, the Department of Justice. These are non-FBI folks. Some of these names you've never heard. But our investigators have found out these people are and were heavily involved in the process. People like Joel McIlvaine, who was assistant branch director of the civil division of the FBI. Vanita Gupta, civil rights division. Diana Flynn, litigation director for LGBTQ civil rights. Sharon McGowan, civil rights division. Preet Bharara, U.S. Attorney, Southern District of New York. Matthew Axelrod, Principal Assistant to Deputy Attorney General. Peter Kadzik, Assistant Attorney General, Congressional Liaison. Tricia Beth Anderson from the Office of Legal Counsel for the FBI. Rachel Brand, Associate AG, number 3 official behind Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein. David Loftman, DOJ National Security Division, Deputy Assistant AG. Bruce Orr, there's a name you've heard a lot of, Associate Deputy Attorney General. Mary McCard, Acting Assistant Attorney General. Sally Yates, Deputy AG. John Carlin, Assistant Attorney General. All of these people, starting from the first name at the bottom and working up, are all in this process. They all know something. They were all involved. And listen to this. Listen to the ones that are gone. McIlvaine, Gupta, Flynn, McGowan, Bharara, Axelrod, Kadzik, Anderson, Rachel Brand, David Loftman, Bruce Orr, Mary McCord, Sally Yates, and John Carlin, every one of them. Fired or resigned. Let's flip over to the FBI. Interesting there. Executive Assistant Director James Turgall, John Giacalone, Michael Steinbeck, Greg Power, Bill Priestap, Michael Cortan, Josh Campbell, Andrew McCabe, James Rybecki, James Baker, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, and guess who? James Comey. They'll start at the bottom, James Turgall, who resigned. And most of those names that I gave you are of folks that have resigned. Let me just give you a for example. Let's just say they go to James Turgall. And he's got a lot of information about it, and he knows stuff. And so there are probably some things that he was involved in or knew about. His not reporting those things that bordered on criminality is what? Obstruction of justice. So they say, James, look, you could be charged for obstruction of justice, which means you'd probably go to jail. And so we'll cut you a deal, but you need to tell us what you know about John Giacalone, who was his direct supervisor. And it goes on and on and on and on, all the way up to James Comey. Over at the CIA, there's really only one person to talk about. Several Obama holdovers in intelligence very loudly began attacking those in the Trump campaign shortly after the 2016 election. In fact, I think during the campaign, the finish of the campaign, they were attacking the Trump folks. Those comments by people with access to intelligence were shameful, but the most sinister of all was and is John Brennan. Brennan used his authority as former CIA director to suggest that Trump was a traitor and a compromised Russian asset. Folks, let me just tell you this about John Brennan. I follow him on Twitter, and he follows me. And we've had some really nasty exchanges. He is the most arrogant, most self-absorbed demagogue, I think, that there is in Washington, D.C. He's incredible. There is no way, absolutely, that Donald Trump is or was ever a Russian asset. After Trump's Helsinki summit, remember, Brennan declared, quote, he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. When challenged by Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, Brennan stood by that assessment. He said this, I call Trump's behavior treasonous, which is to betray one's trust and aid and abet the enemy, and I stand very much by that claim. MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell told Brennan the investigation was developing while you were still on the job and asked him, did you see enough at that stage to believe that would result in indictments? Brennan replied, I thought at the time there was going to be individuals who were going to have issues with the Department of Justice. Yes. Then in a New York Times op-ed, he wrote this, Trump's claims of no collusion are, in a word, hogwash. Now, Brennan feigns right now that he holds some contrition. I don't know if I received bad information, but I think I suspected there was more than there actually was, he said. Adding this, I'm relieved that it's been determined there was not a criminal conspiracy with the Russian government over our election. Kind of diplomatically trying to walk back something there. And then there's James Clapper. Obama's Director of National Intelligence, Clapper, said from the very beginning of the discussions in the press about Russian collusion ties to the Trump campaign, quote, there is a there. To CNN's Aaron Burnett, Clapper said, my understanding is back in the summer of 16, this all started with questions about financial dealings of Trump associates. That's how this all began. It appears to have come again with what's been out in the media, sort of come full circle now. But I don't see how I exclude or insulate financial dealings here from the investigation. That's just one little bitty thing. And now, folks, we have the breakup. And it was all instigated by the appointment of Attorney General William Barr. Brennan, Clapper, and James Comey are now feeling the heat and are desperately into attack mode, pointing fingers at each other, placing blame. Who started it? Who said we should do this? Who said we didn't? This is an example of just how this demagoguery has already begun to unwind. Listen or watch what Catherine Herridge of Fox News presented earlier this week. It'll give you a little better perspective of what we're talking about.
And now a high-level dispute over which senior government officials pushed the unverified Steele dossier as part of the 2017 intelligence assessment into Russian election meddling. Sources familiar with the matter tell Fox News that a late 2016 email chain indicated that then-FBI Director James Comey told Bureau subordinates that then-CIA Director John Brennan insisted the dossier be included in the intelligence community assessment on Russian election interference, known as the ICA. The sources said the email chain referred to the dossier as, quote, crown material. Last night, former Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy, who had access to sensitive records as part of the Republican-led Russia probe, gave his assessment.
Brennan and Comey right now, the only thing they seem to share is a hatred for Donald Trump. It's going to be interesting if they begin to turn on one another. I've seen the document. I'm not going to describe it any more than that. Comey's got a better argument than Brennan based on what I've seen.
But in a statement to Fox News, a former CIA official put the blame squarely on Comey. Quote, former Director Brennan, along with former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, are the ones who opposed James Comey's recommendation that the Steele dossier be included in the intelligence report, the official said, adding that it was Comey's decision to brief the president-elect on the unverified dossier. After multiple requests, Comey's lawyer did not provide any comment to Fox News, John.
Catherine Herridge of Fox News, and you heard Trey Gowdy speaking with her in that, talking about the very thing that we're discussing here today. These guys are jockeying for position because they know what could and probably is going to happen to all of some of them. They're all going to jail. Think about it. Everything they're being finally investigated for, they're talking about already to the press. They're posturing to stay away from obstruction of justice charges. And that's what they're all guilty about. So they're trying to cut deals. They're laying the groundwork to go to Barr and say, look, I'll give you this if you'll just let me not have to go to jail. Let me pay a fine or community service or whatever. It's going to work that way. It works that way every time. Now, there are a whole lot of other players in this thing that we've not even talked about yet. And the process, when we come back, we're going to do just that. Sit tight. You're going to be surprised when we get to the end of this, when we talk about names of those that are going to be a part of it, that are a part of it. You'll find out in just a minute at truthnewsnet.org.
From McAllen, Texas to Berlin, Germany, the universal language is truth on TNN,
the Truth News Network.
It happens quickly and silently. About 260 children younger than 5 drown in pools each year. That's about 1 nursery school class each month. Put a fence around your pool. Place an alarm on doors leading to the pool area. For more pool safety tips, visit the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission website at cpsc.gov.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Of all the things invented in 1962, some have faded away, like cassette tapes, and others are still very much with us, like lava lamps and Motel 6. Yep, Motel 6 is celebrating 50 years of giving travelers a good night's rest and saving you more for what you travel for. But we're just getting started. In fact, the longer you watch us, the better we get. Kind of like a lava lamp. Trippy. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6. 50 years and the light's still on.
You're fighting back the tsunami of ignorance with Dan Newman. TNN,
the Truth News Network.
So are you thinking through this now that we've told you there are other people that we haven't come up with names of? We've just talked about a few of them that are front and center right now. Demagogues that are getting their proverbial butts handed to them by the Department of Justice. And facts. Giving facts and getting facts upon which to make educated decisions by lawmakers is exactly what the world needs, especially in Washington, D.C. Now, these are just a few of the demagogues in this whole matter. We didn't mention these names. How about Hillary Clinton? Those in the Obama White House, like Attorney General Loretta Lynch, and then, of course, her predecessor, Eric Holder, who left for Lynch to become the AG. Also, UN Ambassador Samantha Power, Bill Clinton himself. And then there's this, the person who is most likely to either give Federal Attorney Durham information regarding Obama or go to jail. This person's involvement certainly was criminal. Rather than be prosecuted for at least obstruction of justice, this person will surely turn. This person is former National Security Advisor Susan Rice. Now, even back before then, she was a UN ambassador for the United States. She was in the White House all the time. She was a close advisor to President Obama. We are fairly certain that Ms. Rice is already preparing to sing to save her own skin. Who knows just how far up in the Obama White House implication will go before this matter is done. The uncovering up, the cover-up, which is certainly many layers deep and many players wide, has just begun. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this narrative here today. There are a whole lot of other players in this. And as the layers of the onion are peeled away, the identities of further people from the Obama White House and in the transition and then during the Trump administration, there have been a lot of those that have done some evil things, criminal things. This is going to go down as probably the worst such instance to happen in American history. It will far exceed what went on in Whitewater for the Clintons and all the way back to Richard Nixon and Watergate. I promise you, we have only seen the beginning, and the rats are scurrying about. As the ship of deep state appears to be scuttled, this is going to be a whole lot of fun to watch. They're already screaming. It is hilarious to watch Comey and Clapper and Brennan, and it's only going to get worse. The tables appear to be turning in Washington, and the demagogues are being turned out. Thanks for being here, folks. We got a lot of other things to talk about in the upcoming week, so make sure you stick close. TruthNewsNet.org. Until we see you again, have a great day. So long, everybody.
When madness is the norm, the truth is a radical act of courage. Remain calm. Be brave. Wait for the signs. TNN,
the Truth News Network.